And welcome to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes. Two ways for you to interact with us here on the program, 201-939-4513. Can't get to a phone? Hit us up on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. We'll get to your phone calls. We'll get to your tweets in a little bit. Free agency still very much in the mix as teams are continuing to add some players. We'll get to that also a little bit later on in the program. But we figured we'd start off on an interesting article that was just published, Paul, on NFL.com. Elliot Harrison wrote it, and what he has done is he has ranked every single team through the first wave of free agency, because obviously there's been a number of changes on offense and defense across the landscape, and the Giants on this latest rankings are put in the fifth spot with some of the moves that they've made through free agency, bringing guys back and so forth. In terms of the rest of the NFC, the Falcons are the only team ranked ahead of the Giants in terms of that conference. They're number two. The Patriots are first, the Steelers are third, and the Raiders are fourth. But the Giants in the top five, liking the fact that the defense is still intact for the most part, and saying that there's upside if DJ Fluker could provide a boost to the offensive line, as well as the emergence of Paul Perkins, they pointed out last season, who seemed to spark the running game.
Well, this is just the latest of a number of national media who have really, really thrown a lot of bouquets towards Paul Perkins. I mean, look, I think the guy's terrific. I think we've all talked about him since he was drafted. His production at UCLA was unquestioned. He's got the pedigree in his family background. And we know now firsthand, he is a football player. I mean, he's the real thing. How good he can be, I still don't know. I still believe, while he's got tremendous upside, I still think he's better as part of a threesome in the backfield. I still believe that Perkins, Vereen, and Mr. X, that power back, would make a terrific, you know, new version of Earth, Wind, and Fire for the Giants running game. There are still some of those out there who think he could be a primary back. I have some doubts. I'm not going to say he can't do it, but I'd still like to see more of a three-headed monster. I think you're in my boat on this
one. Well, I'm actually one of the people that believes he can be
you do?
A main back. Yes, I've said that numerous times.
I am corrected.
On the program. No, I believe he could be an 18-carry type of player. I don't see why there's any issue with
him. Well, I have no problem with 18 touches a game. There could be three pass receptions involved in that.
Yes.
I don't think that getting him 20 to 25 touches a game, though, is going to maximize his efficiency. I think it actually could hurt his efficiency just because of the build and the style of runner that he
is. Well, I don't disagree with that last statement, but I guess my point is I don't think he has to get to 20 to be quote-unquote considered the workhorse back or the guy that's
nowadays
doing the heavy lifting.
Anybody who gets more than 20 touches seems to be a dinosaur.
Well, I was going to say, correct. I mean, if you get more than 15, you're considered somewhat of a workhorse in this day and age.
So
I look at Perkins as between that 15 to 19.
All right, so we're in the same ballpark.
Well,
we're just using a different name.
We're using a different terminology,
that's
if that's
all.
What you want to do it. But
I still think he's the lead back.
Yes.
I agree with you. Oh,
we're
good then.
But, okay, well, if that's where you're coming from, then we're in agreement there. But I guess there are people, and I thought this is what you were alluding to, Paul. I thought you were alluding to there are people that have their doubts about whether or not he can be a lead back and he can be the guy that gets the majority of the carries, because you hinted at you'd like to see a three-man rotation. But it's interesting because I remember when Craig Johnson, the Giants running backs coach, entering this past season, so coming off the 2015 season, if you recall, where it was really a game of musical chairs somewhat. Now, part of that was injuries where you were seeing not the same running back every single game. And one of the things the Giants coaching staff mentioned during the season is we'd like to have guys with defined roles because we think that can gain some more continuity in the running game. And Jennings handled the majority at the beginning of the year. You had Vereen mixed in. Then when Vereen got hurt, Jennings was still doing much of the heavy lifting.
He was.
It wasn't until late in the season, Paul, when Perkins all of a sudden emerged. Now, we saw some flashes the Monday night game against the Vikings. He had that big screen play where he gained Green Bay. He had some runs here or there. That was early in the season, but he didn't really take on a bulk of the workload until late in the season when they started to really branch out in his role.
That is true. I think ultimately, let me do it this way, because this is probably the easiest way to get rid of all of the confusion as to what you want to call him or what you don't want to call him. I think the Giants should get about 30 attempts per game on the ground, roughly. because in today's game, they're now upping it. It used to be about 65 snaps a game. Now it's up to about 70 snaps a game because teams are much quicker with their offenses, with the tempo of how they're playing. So you're getting roughly 70 snaps per game. I'd like them to have at least 30, even if it's a couple here or there, about 30 running plays per game. Is that okay with you?
Yeah. I mean, listen, that would be an ideal circumstance
okay.
if they could get 30.
So now if he's the lead back and he's running the ball 15 to 18 times, you know, 15 times, gets a couple of passes in there, whatever. If he's touching the ball between 15 and 20 times, well, then that means the other backs, the other two, the power guy and Shane Vereen, will then be divvying up the other 50% of the running back touches. Are you okay with that?
Yeah, if they could split it up. But once again, if you can get him about 15 to 16 carries a game, and then, which doesn't count with the running game, maybe three receptions per contest, touches that way,
okay.
then you're still getting to about 20 touches for Paul Perkins a game, which I think is a fair compromise.
Then,
I think you want to get him the ball about 20
right.
times.
But then we're talking about the other dozen touches are going to go to the other two backs.
And that's fine.
You're fine with
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I have no problem
so
with that.
Okay, so we're good.
Yeah. If Shane Vereen, if they can find ways to work him in on third downs, and Vereen, too, remember, you know, it's not so much about getting Vereen the carries on the ground. You want to get Vereen the touches through
Correct.
The air as well.
Correct.
And that doesn't count against those 30 runs that you're talking
but
about.
But he will do some running out of passing formations. We've seen him run draw plays. And,
Correct.
You know, just to keep people honest, you're going to have to run him sometimes. You can't just say, if Shane Vereen's in the game, we're going to throw it. That just doesn't make sense.
No, because you don't want to be that predictable.
Exactly.
Now,
so we will run it some, and I do think the short yardage guy, there are enough of third and twos in a game, second and twos, third and ones, and goal line situations where that power guy, he's going to get his too.
Correct, but we're talking about that power guy could get about 6 to 7 carries, and I think that would be fine in terms of the mathematics
anyway.
And so forth. So it's intriguing, though, that Paul Perkins is one of the big bright spots that the national media looks
getting
at.
Getting a lot of love.
Entering the 2017 campaign. If you want to watch the remainder of the program, head on over to Giants.com. Lance Beto, Paul Dottino with you here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, Wednesday's edition. We're going to get into some more free agency storylines. We started off with an article at NFL.com that you can check out. Elliot Harrison put together rankings for every single team in the National Football League. The Giants, number 5, based on some of the moves that have taken place. And getting back to what we were just talking about, I'm looking up the numbers from last season, Paul.
Yes.
Just to put those numbers in perspective, you mentioned 30. Last season, the Giants averaged 25 carries per game. Based on the math, 24.9 if you want to be exact. But
mm-hmm.
I think it's fair to estimate that the 25. So that put them, just based on in terms of the finish, that put them tied for 21st in the NFL.
You got to get that up.
I agree. The Cardinals and the Chargers were the two other teams that were tied with the Giants for 21st.
All right, now where would 30 carries a game have put you?
Now, if you got 30 carries a game, you're talking about uncharted territory for the most part. Even based on last season, Paul, Cowboys were at 31.2. The Bills were 30.8, and the Patriots are 30.1. That was it. Everybody else was below 30.
Okay,
so
and
three
two
teams,
of those teams were bona fide Super Bowl contenders.
Correct. Well, I think most people would agree with you. I certainly would agree with you that if you get 30 carries a game, you're doing something right.
More than one thing. You're probably doing a lot of things.
Correct.
Right?
First of all, you're milking the clock, so you're up there in time of possession, and that's exactly where Dallas and New England were.
Mm-hmm.
You have a balanced attack in terms mm-hmm. of your passing and your running game. That indicates an awful lot of good things in terms of the National Football League.
May I also just peek over your shoulder
sure.
and see that the number 4 team, the Tennessee Titans, so the Cowboys have a great offensive line. The Titans have a great offensive line. The Bills have an okay offensive
line. Hey, they
line.
Were a top running game.
They do run block yeah. well. They may not pass block well, but they run block well. And the Patriots, an efficient offensive line, if not a great one, an efficient one. And, you know, again, that's not a coincidence.
Of course, it goes hand in hand.
It really does.
I'll throw another team out there, the Texans. With their quarterback play, you know, they were leaning a lot on the running game, too.
They did.
And they didn't have the same personnel in the backfield. And they also are up there.
Could you imagine if Arian Foster was the real Arian Foster that we knew from a few years ago?
And he stayed healthy. Of course.
Wow.
But you know what? Even with that being said, Paul, I think it's impressive, and this speaks volumes of Houston's defense, similar to the Giants, that despite the fact that they
yeah.
did lose some playmakers, they were still up there in terms of the running game.
No question.
Certainly says a lot. 201-939-4513, that is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants chat on Twitter. Let's open up the phone lines as we get the festivities started here on Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We got Mike in Suffolk County. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Doing well, Mike. How's things with you?
Good, good. I want to talk the draft, and I have a couple of points I'd like to make and a couple of questions. You know, the draft, you know, obviously is weak in offensive linemen, and even though we need one, I'm thinking, you know, that we need to wait and not reach in the first round for one. The only one I would really consider is a guy named Forrest Lamp, and I know
Kentucky.
He's not a tackle, although some people say he might be able to play tackle.
He's guard slash tackle.
Yeah, and but the thing I'm thinking about is you have two upcoming free agents next year in Pugh and also Richburg, and you're probably not going to be able to sign both. And I'm thinking that when you think about Richburg, you know, he's a very, very smart player. He's mainly in the right spot at, you know, all times, but he doesn't have enough weight, and he gets pushed around, okay? And I'm thinking that that's the guy we're not going to sign, okay? You know, if you bring in a guy like Lamp, he might be able to play center. He's a weighty guy. I heard he's smart. I think that might be a way to go. The other thing I wanted to ask you about is McCaffrey. And when I see when I was watching the combine, and when I was watching him, I mean, the guy is amazing. And I'm not into picking a running back in the first round, but when I watch him, the person I thought of when I watched him was Frank Gifford. And I just wanted to hear what your thoughts are on that.
Well, wow. Appreciate the first phone call, first of all.
You want to take Richburg or McCaffrey?
Well, I was going to go the Richburg route.
Go right ahead.
If you wanted to jump in the archives about the Frank Gifford comparisons, I certainly am not going to shy away from you taking that.
Go ahead.
With respect to looking at maybe a guy like Forrest Lamp, who I think could very well be there at the 23rd overall pick, I don't think that's necessarily a stretch to be a replacement for some of the offensive linemen that are set to be free agents. And he was correct, Mike, in saying that Justin Pugh and Weston Richburg are both scheduled, as of right now, to be free agents entering 2018. But I think you also need to look at it is that Forrest Lamp could also be a guard-slash-tackle for the future to replace some of the veterans that are also currently on the offensive line. And I wouldn't be necessarily in a hurry to say, well, Pugh and Richburg have served their time here for the Giants. Let's get rid of them and then bring in another young guy to replace them. I think that it would be ideal to have another young guy that you could build around two other players that have at least gained some valuable reps on the Giants' offensive line, as opposed to Lamp being a replacement. And versatility is a big key, and versatility is also a facet that I think, based on track record, Paul, the Giants' front office looks for when they bring in offensive linemen. They much more look at a guy that could play two positions than necessarily bring in a guy and he's automatically assigned to one spot on the offensive line.
I would agree with that, and I would also tell you this. If you look at the track record of this team, in recent years, when they had their last good offensive line, they did everything they could to re-sign the O'Haras, the Deals, the Snees, the Seiberts, the McKenzies. They made sure that those guys stayed around as long as they could, and then, in fact, they wound up waiting too long before rebuilding the line. So I would not necessarily automatically believe that Richburg or Pugh are going to be gone in another year. I just wouldn't. The Giants do have an understanding that when you get a good offensive lineman and you groom him from the get-go, you tend to hold on to him. I think that's where their mindset is, and I know it may be difficult to do, but you're also not calculating what the player's mindset is. And if there's one thing about offensive linemen, and let me make something very clear about this. I learned this a long time ago. The offensive line is the one position on the field, the one position that is more together as a one or together as a unit than any other position on the field. All the positions on defense are a little bit more solo. A little bit more solo. Yes, there's got to be cohesion. Yes, there's got to be chemistry. But when you talk about the offensive line, you're talking about a position where the sum of the parts can be greater than the individual parts, more so than any other position in football.
Well, the other thing I was going to add to that, Paul, is about the relationship that you're alluding to. Marshall Newhouse, who just recently signed with the Raiders, outpouring of support from his teammates
yes.
in terms of when he left New York to go to Oakland. Now, you could say, well, you know, most guys on the roster are friendly, and that's fine, but I think it's extremely apparent when an offensive lineman leaves the team, much more so than any other position, mm-hmm. you could see it brings out a little bit more reaction from his teammates than any other spot. So I think that speaks to what you were just talking about.
There truly is more of a domino effect in the trenches with the offensive line. See, a defensive player, if Lance is playing nose tackle, okay, and I'm playing defensive end, or even if it's a 4-3 front.
We're in trouble, by the way, if that's the case.
That would be really bad.
No, it
but the
be.
Point is, there is a certain premium paid to athleticism on defense, where a defensive player may not read the scheme right, may not do exactly what he's supposed to do, but because of his athleticism, he might be able to make the play, even though it didn't go exactly as it was drawn up on the chalkboard. That can happen more so on defense than on offense. On offense, if the offensive lineman misses a block or the guard doesn't pull like he's supposed to, and the guy next to him doesn't work in cohesion with him, chances are that play's a bust. There is no, quote, athletic makeup from an offensive lineman's perspective. If they're not together, the play busts. That's it.
Oh, breakdown. Yeah.
It's done. One guy misses a block. The play is done. On defense, if I miss a tackle, maybe my outside linebacker makes the tackle. There's more room for error. There's more room for individualism. Not on the offensive line. So anyway, I think the Giants understand that. I think we have now seen that this organization is going to pay more attention to offensive linemen. I think we now understand that. They know they need a power running game and that they're going to put a higher premium on that part of the game. And so I wouldn't be so sure to think that Prue or Richburg are going to be gone. I know it was a long-winded explanation, but I just want to get that straight because we've heard too much of that in the last couple of months.
No, I agree. And then you look at, you know, bringing in Rhett Ellison, I think that's another indication that they want to get this running game going. And look at what Ellison's background is in terms of that fullback tight end. He's a blocker. He's a guy that does not shy away from physicality in the trenches. Before we get to the next call, the other part of the question was Christian McCaffrey to Frank Gifford. And whether or not there's some similarities
there. Here's why, for you young folks out there, you're shaking your head and you're saying, I don't understand it. The reason he is saying that is because Frank Gifford was the most versatile New York Giant to ever play the game. Joe Morrison would also be right up there. Those two guys probably more than any other Giant that I could ever remember. And McCaffrey shows a tremendous amount of versatility on offense. It looks like he could play receiver, slot, halfback, fullback, H-back. It looks like he can pretty much do anything that he wants to do. Of course, he couldn't play defense, and Gifford and Morrison both played defense in their careers. They did.
Well, the game
you
was a
I'm
little.
Kidding?
No, I'm not kidding.
They did.
I don't think you're kidding. I'm just saying the game was a little bit different back then in terms of the amount of players on the roster and the padding and this and
yeah.
that. So,
Giff and Morrison both played defensive back during their careers. But McCaffrey, yes, in that regard, I understand the comparison. I think he's a tremendous athlete. Again, tremendous tools. Personally speaking, I would not draft him at 23 if it were me. And if the phone was ringing at 23 and he was still on the board and somebody really wanted him, I'd make them pay through the nose and make a trade and see what I could get. That would be me.
No, I'm with you, too. I don't value running backs that high in the first round, no matter where you select. Now, you know, the Giants recently, remember, they drafted David Wilson. Unfortunately, injuries cost him his career. And if Wilson stayed healthy, I think maybe we look at that pick a little bit differently. Unfortunately, couldn't predict that. But for the most part, you know, running backs, it's a position, Paul, where the injury rate is so high. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people are going to keep pointing to Ezekiel Elliott and this and that, but, you know, the Ezekiel Elliotts of the world don't necessarily come around every season. And I think you could get quality running backs in the fourth and the fifth round. Case in point, you know, the Giants with their selection of Paul Perkins, who has the potential to be a very productive back, and they only use the fifth round pick, and that'll even go and stay within the division. The Washington Redskins, Alfred Morris was a late round pick, Paul. He's now with the Dallas Cowboys. He was an 1,000-yard rusher for his first few seasons
Tiki
with the Redskins.
Barber was a number two. Joe Morris was a number two.
Well, those are even higher than what I'm talking about. I'm talking about guys that I've seen in the fourth and the fifth round.
Yeah, you don't have to
do that in the sixth round. No.
And especially if you're going to go with the three-headed backfield, like I think we both agree on, right? We do agree on that. Okay.
You want me to shake my head on everything. We're in the same ballpark on that.
And if you're going to do that,
fair
you don't take
it.
The number 23 overall pick for a guy who's going to be one of three in the backfield. That just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, because he's not necessarily taking on as much of the workload to warrant that selection.
And he is not a true power back in its purest form. And I think that's the guy who's missing from this backfield, is the power back. They've already got the elusive slasher athletic type in Perkins.
And Vereen, too, is sort of an
athletic
slasher
absolutely.
Type of back. Let's head back to the phone lines at 201-939-4513. Don is in Texas. Don, welcome to the program. What do you have?
Hey, good afternoon, guys. I'm glad you guys made it in with all the snow going on
Before
you shuffled your way through.
Absolutely.
Crazy. That is crazy. All right, I just got a couple points, and I got one quick question because I really don't understand the second part, which is what I'm going to ask about how the franchise works with JPP. But the very first part, we can talk about all the draft, and we don't know how this board is going to unfold. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to throw out there, I just think the number one priority to me is offensive line. It has to be. They're one piece away from making this an elite group. Look at the Maulers you got up front now with Fluker that was just added. If you can get a nice lineman to complement and complete that group, we're literally one player away from being an elite offensive line if they could just blend it together. Second point, I've got a quick question about the JPP and how the franchise tag actually works. Because it kind of happened to Josh Norman last year when he was released. Did Washington get anything compensation-wise for it? It's just looking at the situation.
Oh, Carolina, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm just having a hard time seeing how they're going to fit JPP and all these other pieces in. Say what happens if he doesn't sign and they let and something happens in between there. If he doesn't sign the franchise, or what happens?
Well,
if that
you have to understand, Don. The $17 million, which is the estimated franchise tag for the defensive end position, that's already penciled in to the cap number for the Giants.
The money's in escrow.
Yeah, they don't have to wait for JPP to sign it. So that's already factored in to the finances. It's holding a spot, essentially, is the best way to describe it. So whether JPP signs it or not, there's still a spot waiting for JPP on the roster. Once JPP signs, they don't all of a sudden have to factor in another $17 million. It's already a place card holder.
Correct.
In the current
and
cap.
What if it gets ugly between them and some, which I'm hoping that doesn't happen because I love JPP, but let's just say something like that happens and it just becomes at a standstill. What goes on from there?
Well, you have until July 15th to work out a long-term deal.
Correct.
So if we use your hypothetical and July 15th comes and goes and there's no long-term deal, the tender is still there for him to sign.
Correct.
And the $17 million is still staying there within the breakdown of the cap.
Correct.
So nothing dramatically changes if
now,
it gets to a standstill.
If the Giants believe that JPP is simply not going to come in and play, and he says, forget it, I'm never setting foot on that field again,
well,
if that happens, then they can withdraw the tag, they get the $17 million back under the cap, and JPP becomes an automatic, instant, unrestricted free agent and can go anywhere, and the Giants don't get anything back for him.
Which is the Josh Norman situation, where the tag was placed on him, then it was rescinded, and then he was free to go wherever he wanted.
All right. Thanks for explaining that to me, guys. You guys have a good day.
Yeah,
right,
no
thank
problem.
You too.
Appreciate the phone call, Don.
In terms of the offensive line, you're right. I think one more stud offensive lineman to compete for a starting job would really do this O-line a tremendous amount of help. However, what I discovered when I was at the Combine a couple of weeks back is that even the top four offensive linemen, these top four tackles in particular, who are judged to be potential first-round picks, all of those guys received mixed results, okay? The top tier, the potential first-round tackles in this draft, even Ramczyk, who, by the way, back in January, I was saying, hey, I'd be looking at this guy. They're all getting mixed reviews. There are no unanimous blue chippers on the board. And these four potential first-round tackles may only be first-round tackles because the class as a whole is full of a bunch of reserves. These are not blue-chip stud plug-and-play tackles in the draft. So while I understand what you're saying, and I would agree with you 9 times out of 10, you don't force one of these guys into 23 just because you feel you need one if the value is not truly there. Now, if you are in the camp that believes the guy who drops the 23, whether it's Robinson or Ramchick or whoever it turned out to be, Bowles, and you really believe you're in the camp that says he is a blue-chip stud. Again, there's mixed reviews on all these guys. But if you believe that, then it's not necessarily a bad pick because you're going with your board that says he belongs there. But the general consensus that I found in Indianapolis is that there is a wide range of opinion on these guys. There are no consensus blue chippers among the offensive linemen.
But all it does is it all goes back to how the Giants view these players. Regardless of what the wide reports, if the Giants feel that there's stock and substance behind these guys, then you know they're going to be higher on their board than perhaps what another team views it. And that tends to happen with a number of players, even if there is a consensus each and every
Simply
year.
Explaining the philosophy, though, as to why you would pass on one, even though the thought and the thinking has a lot of merit, there would be a reason, though, why you would pass. Because if you think there are blue chippers at other positions, especially ones of need, and you think that the offensive linemen are a mixed bag, you gotta go elsewhere.
No doubt about that. And for people who look at the draft, and I know we've written about it and spoke about this on a few features on Giants.com, who think that, you know, it's all about offensive linemen and it's a must that they have to go in that direction in the first round. Last season, and I keep bringing this up as an example, Paul, you had Janoris Jenkins, who you brought in free agency, and you had DRC already on the roster. So on paper, you had two significant corners who you felt, okay, you're in a good position. Maybe that's not the priority of a position. And then what happens? They take Eli Apple in the first round.
Right.
So just because you think there's depth at one position does not mean that the Giants wouldn't target that position in the first round.
Remember, Apple was the highest cleanly rated player on their board.
Well, and that's what it gets back to.
Right.
So there was depth at that position, or at least they felt they had their starters.
Well,
but
you need three.
You need three. But I guess my point is that if they would have went in a different direction, I don't think anybody would have said, oh, I can't believe the Giants didn't take a corner in that spot.
No.
Knowing that DRC and Jenkins were already on the roster. So, like you said, if they have a highly rated player at a position where on paper it looks like they already have some substance or stock, you still lean towards the highest rated player because that's the person who you think is going to make the biggest impact in transitioning from college to the pros.
I know you and I feel strongly that O.J. Howard won't be there.
Correct.
The super tight end out of Alabama. But could you imagine if he fell to them at 23? I'll be honest with you. I'd have a hard time with them not picking him if he were at 23 because now you talk about lining him up at tight end. You talk about putting Ellison in at fullback. And now if you can't get a third and one, something is seriously wrong.
Well, you could have the double tight end formations, which is a popular alignment for most NFL teams. One guy stays in to block, the other guy runs routes, or it goes back to the scenario that you also were alluding to earlier in the show, like Christian McCaffrey. If you're not high on Howard, let's just use this as a hypothetical, and you start receiving calls.
Listen to the phone.
Then you listen exactly to what's being offered, and then maybe you can get some additional picks and so forth. So it's a good position to be in if guys drop to you. You either love them as an organization or other teams are loving them, and then maybe you can turn it around into a trade. Let's head back to the phone lines at 201-939-4513. Lance Meadow, Paul Dottino with you here on Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Mickey is in Pennsylvania. Mickey, what's happening?
Hello.
How we doing, Mickey?
I'm doing good. So I just wanted to make a call. I was thinking, like, I was looking at our roster, and I was thinking, like, we have a lot of good capable guards that could all compete for the spots. But, like, I know Justin Pugh is, like, doing really good at his left guard spot, but what if we had him compete at left tackle with Eric Flowers?
Well, Pugh has tackle experience. There's no doubt about that. I just go back to Justin Pugh's been on the record all throughout this past season, and he said part of the reason why he feels much more comfortable in the scheme is because this was the one year where they didn't go to Justin Pugh, and they didn't say, Justin, in the event that our left tackle goes down or in the event that our right tackle goes down, you're going to be the first option that we're going to move out of the guard spot. He stuck to one position, and he attributed that as a big reason as to why there was better continuity from his perspective. So I don't really think that the first move for the team is, and this is my opinion, that they want to now move him back out of that spot when he's now come off a season where he has specifically stayed in the left guard spot.
Yeah, I kind of see what you're saying there. But I just, like, I know, like, you guys talk a lot about, like, having competition at the spots and stuff like that. And I just really don't see anybody in, like, we also talk a lot about the left tackles and stuff like that. I just don't really see a left tackle in the draft that could be like our left tackle left next year. Like,
well, that's what we were just talking about, though. I mean, there is a mixed bag of reviews on all of these guys. They're not necessarily blue chip plug and play tackles.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, do you force the issue? No, you don't force the issue. That would be a mistake. Of course, again, that depends on how the Giants see those guys.
Yeah. And I just don't really see anybody on our roster other than Flowers that could play left tackle next year.
So he might be the best bet. And you know what? Coach McAdoo said he's working hard. Maybe he can do it. Maybe everybody out there who's got an Eric Flowers voodoo doll is going to be surprised.
Yeah, I've always tried to keep optimism with Eric Flowers because, I mean, we drafted him so high. And when we drafted him, I was a little – had mixed reviews on the pick, but he does show a lot of potential. And he's got good footwork, and he's huge. He's, like, really strong. But hopefully we could get – hopefully we could develop him and he could become a really good left tackle.
Right. Well, you know, we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call. By the way, earlier this morning on Sirius NFL Radio, Sirius XM NFL Radio, I want to get that right. Right, Lance? DJ Fluker was on and said, and they're quoting him as saying, I was brought to New York as a right guard, but I'm willing to play anywhere on the line if they need it. So that gives us a little bit more clarity than the other day when he was signed. That's this quote from Fluker on the Sirius program today. We know John Jerry was re-signed. And we know
not
that
official, though. Nothing has been officially announced by the team. There are reports out there
correct.
With respect to that.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And so, boy, competition's great, huh?
Well, if you look at Fluker's pedigree in terms of his experience with the Chargers, started off as a right tackle, and then his final two seasons he was moved to right guard. So he can play both positions, which has been documented in the National Football League. Now that we hear what he said on SiriusXM NFL Radio, that's perhaps what the vision is bringing him in. But that doesn't mean I wouldn't eliminate the possibility that perhaps he could get some reps in training camp at multiple spots.
Oh, agreed. In fact, if you remember way back when, back in the springtime, last year, Bobby Hart was originally going to compete at guard with John Jerry at one point, and they were hoping that they were going to deal with the right tackle spot on its own merit. And then what happened? Well, all of a sudden, Bobby Hart, who had been taking some reps at both spots, became a tackle instead of a guard and started competing with Newhouse out at right tackle. And it was like, okay, guess what? Brett Jones, the backup center, can play some guard. So we really don't need Bobby Hart to do that. He's going to start getting more and more and more and more and more reps at tackle. And that's where he wound up playing. So keep all of that in mind. It's fluid. It's all fluid.
It'll change based on the scenario. All right, let's head back to the phone lines at 201-939-4513. Appreciate the phone call, Mickey. Ray is in Alexandria. Ray, what's happening?
Nothing much, guys. Thanks for taking my call again. You guys actually touched on what I really wanted to call in and talk about, which was O.J. Howard. If he somehow miraculously falls from 23, if you're the GM, would you consider taking him for our team?
I don't see how you wouldn't consider him. The phone will probably be ringing if he falls to 23, and you certainly want to consider the offers. I mean, you may get just bowled over with something that's too good to pass up. That's possible, especially if Njoku is still on the board. You know, I would certainly then consider it, but it'd be pretty hard for me to pass on Howard if he were sitting there at 23, because I think he's a top 15 for sure. Maybe even a top 10.
Yeah, I think he's a special talent as well too. I'm not so high on Njoku. I think he ran a little slower than I anticipated. And I know you can't measure everything at the combine. You know, there's so much more to it. But I like some of the other tight ends a little bit more. Another thing I wanted to touch on real quick was the linebacker situation that we have. I know that we like Keenan Robinson. He did some things for us last year.
Okay.
In coverage, and I did really love his contributions. That was a really wise move. But I think one thing that he brought to our linebacker core was speed, something that, you know, that kind of distinguished him from everybody else. Aside from being able to recognize in coverage, you know, he had some speed on him. And I was wondering if you guys had any thoughts thoughts about any potential free agents out there or anybody in the draft, you know, it doesn't matter which round that you have your eye on at the linebacker spot in case this doesn't work out or in the event that we do bring him back and we just want to supplement that?
Well, the only thing I will tell you is that the linebacking spot is not very deep in this draft, especially on the inside. It's just not that good. And so, you know, are there some potential guys at the top? Yeah. But is there someone worth number 23? Probably not. You know, I haven't done my film study on the linebackers yet, so I'm not going to give you projections as to second or third round guys who may be able to compete for a starting job. I'm not going to do that because I just haven't done the film work. But it was quite clear from the people I talked to in Indy that, you know, outside of maybe one or two stud prospects who will go early, there aren't too many late first rounders available in this draft.
Well, and I think you were also probably alluding to if there's other free agents out there, right? Not necessarily just the draft. You're saying if Keenan Robinson doesn't come back, or was it strictly a prospect that could replace him?
Well, also other free agents as well. I mean, there's another guy out there that I really like, but I'm not sure if he's in our price range. Zach Brown. I like the speed on him. You know, I like his game
pace. Yeah, you probably can't afford him.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can't afford him, obviously, you know, but just anybody else. You know, I understand the approach we have to take financially. You know, we can't go out and make the big splash. We're just going to have to try to make, you know, good, sound decisions. And I was wondering if there's anybody else out there that you thought, you know, would be a possibility for kicking the tires on if you were the one making the decisions, you know? Just kind of brainstorming.
Well, I mean, I'm looking at a number of the linebackers that are still on the free agent market, and it really comes back to, you know, what makes Keenan Robinson stand out is his ability to go back in coverage.
Yeah.
You know, he's not necessarily just a guy that you bring down to the line of scrimmage and you say, go stop the run. You can bring him back down the field. And, you know, a lot of the free agents that are still out there are more guys that are run stoppers, not necessarily guys that are going to be good back in coverage. For example, one of the top guys back in coverage, you know, A.J. Klein, who is the backup to Luke Kuechly, he signed with the Saints. You know, he's that jack-of-all-trades type of linebacker. There's just not a lot of guys that are built that way in the National Football League. That's what made Keenan Robinson so valuable was his versatility. And it was Kelvin Shepard, who was also a free agent. The two of them split time in the middle. Now, both of them are still available, so I would not rule out that there's no chance that either one of them can return, but it may be difficult depending on how the finances end up with respect to the Giants and some of the other needs that they have to fill out the roster.
And remember, so many teams nowadays understanding that they can't necessarily find good coverage guys at the outside linebacker position are more than willing to play three safeties in those spots. And they call it the jumbo nickel or the big nickel. And they'll go three safeties. And that third safety might be a guy who's about 222 pounds. And so he's a little bit bigger than your normal safety would be, but a little smaller than your outside linebacker would be, and he becomes that pseudo linebacker in those spots.
Yeah, that's a really good point that you bring up, you know. And I'm actually really excited about Darian Thompson coming back. I was super excited about him being a part this year, but, you know, injury got the best of him. But one of the things that happened is that we got to see what this Adams kid had, you know, coming in. And he really made some really solid contributions. I was wondering if, do you think any of them are big enough to kind of play that special package? I mean, I know that Landon had lost weight, and I know he's a big hitter, but do we want to take him out of coverage?
Yeah, well, think about that for a second, though, what you just said. Now, if you have Collins and Thompson playing safety, and let's just say Andrew Adams becomes that guy, because we know he doesn't have great speed or coverage skills sideline to sideline. That's understood. His forte is coming up to tackle people, playing more in the box. How about he becomes the third safety in that kind of package? I don't know. I'm just saying, maybe you don't rule that out.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty exciting, you know, and that's what I really want to do is just really think of the possibilities. Spagnuolo's done a really good job with our personnel, and I'm excited, you know. I'm not going to take up any more time, guys. Thanks so much for the conversation, and have a good day.
All right, you too. Appreciate the phone call. Like that Deion Grant type of role is something that they could certainly look to implement in the event that they wanted to use three safeties more so than linebackers.
Well, consider 65% of the snaps nowadays are with extra wides, and you're going sub package.
Jerry is in Columbus. Jerry, what's happening?
Hi, Giants fan from 1956.
Very
I
nice.
am very concerned about the cap because assuming that John and Jerry signed, from what I read, $10 million, 3 years, $975,000 base pay, and dividing up the 3 years, the cap hits about $1,750,000, and Kerry win $1.9 million. He will be signing the tender eventually. So that leaves the Giants with between $800,000 and $850,000 cap.
Well, first of all, Jerry, we don't know the official numbers on the books. I mean, you're looking at various reports. I've seen various reports. To say that there's a specific number in terms of what they're operating under, I think would be misleading at this point. I mean, clearly, you know, they have signed some players. They've invested in their own in terms of JPP. But, you know, to put an exact number on how much money they have left to spend, I wouldn't necessarily pinpoint it on the figure that you just threw out.
And the other thing you're missing, too, now we understand there's been no official word about Jerry. That's probably because the Giants are doing some finagling. They're probably tweaking some numbers. And that's that. My guess would be if there's a deal agreed to, that's why it hasn't been actually signed and processed yet, because they're trying to tweak some other numbers. And, of course, that's the one thing that nobody ever knows, because until the NFLPA puts out their contract information on their website, nobody truly knows what those numbers are with other guys' deals who may have been reworked. And so it's foolish to even talk about those numbers. So if you got something else to talk about, we'll do it. But it's foolish to use those numbers as a base. It really is.
Okay. One other question is there, in your mind at least, the possibility of the Giants removing the tender offer for JPP?
Well, I mean, I would say that it's probably unlikely unless something dramatically changes. They have a place card holder, as we mentioned earlier in the show, Jerry, and they have until July 15th to work out a long-term deal. So they're not up against the gun where, you know, they need to get the deal done tomorrow. They're going to have a few months to get that done. But I don't think that there's any indication right now that they would all of a sudden be rescinding that franchise tag and letting him become a free agent.
I would be very surprised if they did.
And, Jerry, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. We're going to get to more of your phone calls, more of your tweets along the way here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. But right now we want to transition to some of the college prospects that perhaps the Giants will be keeping close tabs on with the upcoming draft. And we're now joined by Mark Narducci from Philly.com, the Philly Inquirer, to talk about what Temple has to offer the National Football League for the upcoming draft. Mark, Lance Meadow, Paul Dottino with you here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Everything's great. Great guys, thanks.
So in terms of Temple, who is the marquee player to watch if you're the Giants that may be in the ballpark of the late first round, early second round, if you're keeping tabs on what the Owls did this season?
Well, I think they're top two prospects. Everyone knows about Hassan Reddick, the former walk-on who he's listed at 6'1", 237. He played defensive end for them. He's projected as an outside linebacker. Although in some situations he could be a kind of a rush end in a pass rushing situation. He ran a 4.52 at the NFL Combine and blew everybody away. But he's not just a workout warrior. I mean, this year he had 22.5 tackles for loss, set the record in the American Athletic Conference, 10.5 sacks. He's got a great burst and just tremendous athletic ability. He came to Temple as a defensive back and grew into a defensive end. So yeah, I've seen him projected anywhere, and these are all mock drafts, so you take them with a grain of salt. But
yeah,
I've seen him anywhere from 9 to like 26 in the first round. So, but I do think that he will go in the first round. He's a real character guy. I know he interviews well. In fact, I know the Temple people interviewed well. From what I was told at the Combine. So he would be number one. The second one, and a position obviously of need for the Giants, is Deion Dawkins.
Yeah.
He was Temple's left tackle, 6'5", and about 320. He doesn't really project by many to play tackle in the NFL, although he told me some teams have talked to him about that. He played guard at the Senior Bowl, did very well. I think he can be anywhere like from an early to mid second round pick, even to a late third round pick. But I think he's going to be a second day pick. And I think he's going to be a very good player. He's a very very good athlete, a New Jersey product, and I'm sure the Giants know a lot about him.
Yeah, I know a lot about him as well. I think at the beginning he's a reserve. He's not a plug-and-play starter right away, but I think this guy could be a good, solid pro. My question really comes down to about his versatility. As you said, I think a lot of people are projecting him at guard. Do you see him having the skill set, or have you heard people say he's got the skill set to perhaps flop either side or even play a little center if necessary? Those are the kind of things that's really going to help his draft value.
Yeah, I actually heard it from him that he told me even center isn't out. I just talked to him the other day. He said even center isn't out of the question. Although I think with his athletic ability and everything, I think guard is going to be his spot. But I do think you can put him at tackle, more so right tackle to begin with in the NFL. And he can certainly fill in there. But I also think that he can be an eventual starter at guard in the league.
Yeah, see, that's why a guy like him and that kind of player, for me, he's the kind of guy where the Giants really need to hit well on, because if it's not going to be a first-round plug-and-play guy, it's a guy like this who maybe they can get in the second round, and other people like him who will be there in the third round, even the fourth round. Those kinds of guys are going to be important people to plug in on the depth chart. And I like what you're saying about his willingness, because it sounds like if he's telling you about versatility, that must mean he's eager to show that he can do that, which is always a good thing.
No question. He's actually told me that. He'll do anything to get on there. And again, he's one of these guys that I think Temple was his only Division I scholarship out of college. Reddick had no scholarship offers, and Temple has done a great job of developing them. One other guy, Paul, that maybe a Giants could look at as a real late round guy, because I know they're still looking at running backs and everything, is
yep.
Jahad Thomas from Temple,
okay.
Who did not test well running wise at the combine. I think he ran a 4.62.
Yes.
At Temple's pro day, he did not better that. They didn't give out the times, but I was told by a source, and I wrote that he didn't better it, but he was close to it. But scouts have told me that's not his game. He's very elusive. You know, he's returned punts. He's returned kicks. He's very good out of the backfield. He had six receiving touchdowns this year. So I think Jahad Thomas, even, you know, if you can get by that 40 time on him, there's a lot of things he can do. He might be a sixth or seventh round pick for a team, and I think he'd be a good pick.
See, that's the kind of guy I love when people bring up those kinds of guys, because just because he's a sixth or seventh rounder doesn't mean he makes the team right away. You could always redshirt a guy like that.
Practice squad.
On
too.
A practice squad,
yeah.
Or even
he gets
dinged up, and all of a sudden, next year, oh, we got a diamond in the rough that we've kind of worked with and polished a little bit, and now he helps you down the road. That's the kind of guy I'm talking about.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And they have one other player by the name of Nate Hairston, who's a cornerback. He's a converted wide receiver. So last year was the first year started at cornerback, but he really made tremendous strides. And again, he could be either a late-round pick, or if not, he would be a coveted free agent, rookie free agent signing.
6 foot corner, ran a 4.52 at the combine. So.
Yeah, well, again, he's not maybe a burner, but his he's got tremendous toughness. And the thing you like about him, he made so many strides from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. That's what you kind of like to see for a guy that was playing that position as a starter for the first time.
Well, remember, a guy like that, if his frame looks like it could add a little bit of beef to it, he could always wind up playing safety.
Oh, there's no question about it. He's still learning the secondary. As I said, he was a receiver for a long time at Temple.
Talking with Mark Narducci from Philly.com, the Philly Inquirer, talking about the Temple prospects coming up in the NFL draft. I want to go back, Mark, to Reddick, who you started off with, the linebacker slash defensive end. And one of the things that the Giants are always aware of when they're looking at guys who maybe could be that transitional type of player is how well they can function in coverage, especially since a few of the Giants linebackers right now are set to hit the market. What has Reddick done to perhaps stand out? How is he in coverage versus maybe getting to the point of attack and stopping the run?
Well, there's not a lot on him in coverage simply because he was a defensive end this whole time, but they would drop him back. He actually had an interception this year for Temple. Because he runs so well, I think the coverage part, he's going to be able to handle that. He's a very smart player. He picks things up quickly. And, you know, he obviously played well at the Senior Bowl in the linebacker position. So I don't think coverage will be a reason not to draft him, if you know what I mean. I think he's going to be able to do that. His forte is that quick first step, being able to get to the passer and everything like that. But I think he can do everything else that's involved in that as well.
From what you could tell, the character issue, the blemish earlier in his career, is that much of a cloud that's hanging over his shoulders at all? Or is that an incident that really doesn't have much impact on where you think teams grade him?
I think it has no impact. He and Deion Dawkins were involved in that incident in the club, but they were not found guilty in that. They went through the process. They were cleared and everything. The school felt all along that they were innocent, and that's why they didn't kick them off the team. You know, they kept them on there. They believed in them. So I don't think that will have an impact. I'm sure every team has asked them about it.
Sure.
I don't think it is because, again, those two guys didn't make a peep outside of that. So, I don't think that'll be a factor.
Great.
Well, last one for me, Mark, on that topic in terms of character. You've been around some of these guys. You've interacted with them. In terms of perhaps making the transition to the big market, I mean, I know Temple's in Philadelphia. It's not the middle of nowhere. But, you know, how do you envision them perhaps transitioning to the New York market, just in terms of getting a feel for the media and meshing in with a locker room that has a number of personalities as it stands right now?
Again, I don't think that'll be a problem. I don't think that they will be the type that'll want to draw attention to themselves that way. I think they're just going to put their head down and work. If I might be making these guys sound like they're too good to be true, they're pretty good guys. And you know, I've been around them a lot, and I would bet on them, to be honest with you. So I don't think that'll be a problem. I think that they'll let Odell Beckham do his thing and everyone else gain the limelight. And they just want to come in there and learn how to do things. And, you know, I think Matt Rhule, who obviously was a giant assistant for 1 year, did a very good job of just bringing these guys along, not only as football players, but what they do off the field as well.
I think the only question I'd have for you now, Mark, before we let you go, is when you talk about Reddick and you're saying the projection on him that you've seen could be as high as, did you say 9 and as low as 30?
CBSSports.com had him at 9, yeah.
See, now,
in a mock.
That is a really, really wide spectrum, which says to me, anytime that somebody tells me there's that wide a spectrum, that there's a truly mixed bag of viewpoints on a player. So in your mind, what is the biggest controversial thing or the biggest point of debate when people look at him as a player? What would it be if you had to identify it?
Well, I think, first of all, people hadn't seen him enough in live action, right? He played in the American Athletic Conference. It's not the most visible place,
yeah.
So I'm not sure how many of those guys, you know, even guys doing the mocks, have even seen him play beyond the Senior Bowl. So there's an unfamiliarity. You see you see what he did at the combine. You say, this looks good. You talk to people. So I don't know if people have studied him enough. I think the people that will do, and the NFL teams all will do it by then, I think they're going to like what they see on his tape. His tape
right.
is pretty impressive.
Good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Mark, greatly appreciate the insight and the time. Thanks so much.
Thank
Hopefully
you.
We'll talk to you down the line.
A lot of fun.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Have
you
a good day.
It. Mark Narducci from Philly.com, Philly Inquirer, talking about some of the top Temple prospects, including Hassan Reddick, the linebacker / defensive end, depending on how teams are going to utilize
See,
him.
See, I was under the impression that Reddick would go somewhere in the teens. I didn't hear that he was as high as 9,
what?
But I had heard that he was in the teens and, you know, I guess it's not that far to go from the teens to 23, but I don't think he's going to be there for the Giants.
Well, there were early projections also of him going in the second round, too. So things have extremely fluctuated.
Well, I do know the combine shot.
Correct. Out. The combine did, but initially he was rejected as about a second rounder.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden the combine helps you out. You go to the first round, and now, as Mark just mentioned, we're talking about 9 to, you know, 30 is a wide disparity of numbers.
Yeah,
and once again,
is.
That goes back to what we were talking about earlier, Paul. Every team is going to have a different grade and
well,
a different vision in terms of how they can utilize the player. And so
See,
forth.
But if you're the Giants and you're trying to find somebody in case you cannot hold on to a Keenan Robinson who is going to run 20, 25 yards downfield and have to help to cover somebody, you're going to have some doubts here because this is a player who has yet to prove he could do that.
Let's head to Twitter, and if you want to still get on the phone, still feel free to give us a ring at 201-939-4513, but a number of people weighing in on Twitter in terms of some of the things we've been discussing throughout the course of the program. Ben at Gruen. Ben, I would think Fluker next to Flowers would be a power combo, but that would involve at least one position change. Well, if that's the case, if Fluker is next to Flowers, in all likelihood, that would probably mean Flowers moving over to the right side, Paul, based on that tweet, because then you can envision maybe having Flowers at right guard, Flowers at right tackle, excuse me, Fluker at right guard, because I don't see Justin Pugh being moved from the left side to the right side. I just don't think that they're at the point where they want to move him again, considering he's been shifted around sometimes.
Look, I don't know exactly how this is all going to finally shake down, but imagine this. If the Giants have their starting five, okay, and let's for just a second assume that John Jerry is coming back. Let's assume that for just a second for this hypothetical. If he is back in there, well, let's just say the loser between the Hart, Fluker, and Jerry competition becomes the sixth offensive lineman. How would you like to run out a jumbo package with that sixth offensive lineman and Rhett Ellison,
of course,
in your short yardage package or in your goal line package? How would you like to do that? Pretty good, right? You're probably going to get that yard.
I would say it's good.
And if you have any trouble doing it, just put a stake across the line of scrimmage. I guarantee you they'll get the push.
Well, I remember that's what they tried to do at times this past season, where we did see the additional offensive linemen for some of those running plays.
I love doing it. It's something that goes back decades for me. I love doing it.
Well, that's why I think you bring up an interesting point. Everybody's focusing so much on the starters, and don't get me wrong, that's important, but you also need that sixth reliable offensive lineman that you can
Without
move
question.
Around and bring in as an extra guy, whether it be run or pass, and a versatile guy who could come in to replace a starter at multiple positions, whether it be a guard or a tackle, depending on how injuries play out.
Well, it would seem that Brett Jones is clearly the front runner to retain his job as the backup center and maybe the backup swing guard, but there's nothing wrong with having, you know, you need a third tackle because there's got to be a swing tackle, and there's nothing wrong with having a guy who can do two or three of those positions all at once, too.
Well, that's why it goes back to having players that can be shifted around the offensive line. There's always value to that. And even if you have two backups, Paul, that their strengths are guards, then you know what? At least you can have somebody that can come in and play center in a pinch when they have somebody that goes down. And remember, we had that game where against the Eagles this past season, you had Pugh got hurt. They had to shuffle players around. And then Brett Jones got banged up the following week. So whenever you can have players that can play multiple spots, I never think that's a negative. I think that's an asset, which most teams would certainly love to have moving forward. Trying to take another quick glance here at the tweets. This is from at Young Randall 100. I really think we can afford Brown. K-Rob will cost a few mil. JT Thomas, Vereen, and others, he's suggesting, maybe could be cut to free up some room. I mean, that always can be done. There's no limit in terms of when you're allowed to cut a player. They can do that to free up more money, but I don't think that there's been any indications based on some of the names that were thrown out. And it also depends on, you know, what Keenan Robinson wants to do. Does he want to go elsewhere? Is he content with coming back to the Giants? Is money a big factor? Remember, for every player, that's going to differentiate their viewpoint. I think it's important to note that as well.
You know, the one thing that we will never, ever, ever know, and the writers can talk about it all they want, but they don't know it either. You have no clue as to what kind of machinations are going on with tweaking of certain rosters, bonuses, and contracts upstairs. There's just, you know, long after that happens, finally the NFLPA, a couple of days later, a week later, whatever it is, all of a sudden you'll see them change their numbers on base numbers of contracts because that's all they do. They don't ever give you all the additional information, which makes it next to impossible. So what you do is you go to sites like Over the Cap and Spot Rack, and you go to those sites, and you hope that they've got the best information that is available. But you just don't know what kind of tweaks and cuts can be made with contracts upstairs. They're always thinking about things that they could do to create a little bit more room. And it's impossible for anybody outside those doors to ever know what it is they're talking about.
It's a fluid situation.
Sure it is. Absolutely it is.
One last one real quickly on our topics that we've been throwing out here. This is specifically based on the running backs. A.J. Marshall at A.J. Marshall 3. Do you think the Giants will add a running back in free agency? He points out Vereen and Darqua were both on IR. Darqua was brought back. Vereen is still on the roster. But keep in mind, just because players finish the season on IR doesn't mean they're quote-unquote injury-plagued players. For example, you know, outside of this past season for Vereen, he's a fairly durable running back.
Absolutely.
So I wouldn't necessarily have that cash any doubt on whether or not the player could stay healthy moving forward. But I also don't think it's a stretch that they could perhaps bring in another running back in free agency or through the draft. Because if anything, that's just going to foster more competition once you get to OTAs and training camp.
They don't have a true power back on this roster right now. Even though Darqua can run between the tackles, he's not a true bowling ball-type power back. And you know what?
But he's the closest to it, though.
At the moment, he is.
Yeah.
At the moment, he is. And if he wins a spot on the roster, then he wins a spot on the roster, and then he deserves to be here. And good for him, because he's a good guy. And I've always liked Orleans Darqua. But you know what? They still need to have competition there.
Competition everywhere, never a bad thing. With that being said, that's going to wrap up Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We'll be back up and running at noon Eastern on Thursday as well as Friday as we keep you posted on the latest free agency news and the latest storylines connected to the New York Giants. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday right here on Giants.com.